Hello.
How you doing?
None of my things are working. Oh, great. That's fabulous. My QuickTime wouldn't record. Now I got feedback in my nice cast, and then my system preferences were outputting to the speakers. What is happening?
I don't know.
If I was smart, I would have gotten a soundboard set up so I could play Micah's voice to you. It was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't think it quite had the effect that Micah was going for. Dan is...
I mean, it confused you.
Yes. Well, because I was like, why would somebody make a soundboard of this? more than I was like, how is this possible? Is Dan there? No, it was really kind of obvious it was a soundboard, but it was just like, why would someone do it?
My audio sounded like, yeah. I could have realistically have been routed in.
I suppose, and you have been getting up earlier, so it wasn't out of the question that it could have been I suppose.
I'm always up early. What time do you guys record? You guys always do that in the morning, don't you?
Yeah, usually before work, get a good hour's worth in, and then run out the door.
Well, that was fun to listen to.
Yeah, you should be a guest sometime on Unhelpful Suggestions.
That would be incredibly unhelpful.
Incredibly. So one thing, since we are broadcasting this live and recording this and doing all of those things, we should make the same disclaimer we made last week.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah. Hide your kids, et cetera. Especially your, I guess, teenage kids or pre-college age. What is our age limit now? PG-13, what are we doing? Strong language.
This movie is TVMA, rated R. I don't know.
Yeah. The movie we're discussing, 22 Jump Street, the sequel to 21 Jump Street, is laden with things that have meanings and stuff. So even if we were to disguise the words we're using with bleeps, it would be inappropriate anyways. So we're going to skip the bleeping, and we're just going to barrel on ahead. So if you were like, oh no, this is, you know, a problem for me and my delicate constitution, then please skip ahead or backwards to other episodes that don't have this disclaimer.
Mm-hmm. This movie is just as childish and profane and amazingly hilarious as the first one, but like plus one at least.
Yes, I would say it's definitely ramping it up a little. There is a dash of I don't know. Some more evolved thinking about homophobic remarks that occurs in one scene. But other than that, no, I think pretty much all of the same criticisms that you might have about things from the prior film would carry forwards. If you're like, oh no, that's not funny because it's problematic, then those problematizations of the things are here with the stuff. Aware of that.
Mm-hmm. I thought the thing that you referred to at the end there with Channing and his football outfit, it was quite well written, and based on the situation was still funny. And then especially in light of earlier when you're visiting what's his name in the prison there.
Yeah, Riggle and Dave Franco.
That scene is certainly more problematic than the end one.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, so just to get it out of the way, in the prior film, Dave Franco made a joke about something that rhymes with grape, and that's literally the joke, verbatim. I'm not being clever or coy or anything. And I disapprove of that kind of a comment because I don't think it's funny necessarily that the punchline is someone is going to have unwanted advances towards them, and you got a little more of that here because it is confirmed that he got those unwanted advances, and
Yeah, Dave Franco is cellmates with Rob Riggle.
Probably so. And according to Rob mm-hmm. Riggle, it is quite the other way around. However, according to Dave Franco, it is not. So that's there. And then you have a little a bit of a questionable decision with what Rob Riggle has elected to do since the removal of a thing, and it's.
You're trying to be yeah. so diplomatic about it. Ironically, like this, most of this scene was in the trailer for this movie too. So the whole like "I'm Eric's bitch" stuff that was straight up
yeah,
the trailer for this
I
movie.
I think that might have been one of the things that put me off of seeing it. Also, I think around this time, Jonah Hill was doing the press for it, and he got a little mad at a paparazzo and apparently had mouthed off and called them a thing that's not very nice. So, you know, it's
I must have missed that.
He skipped the red carpet and only saw the movie at the premiere and left immediately afterwards. So it was awkward in the news for him. Huh. But it's I don't know. There are lots of other things that I like about this movie, and I do recommend people go see it. But I would say that this scene in particular, when they go to visit Rob Riggle and Dave Franco in the jail cell, is just a little awkward. And I feel
it's a callback, as a lot of the movie and things in the movie are callbacks. And then everything's got to be.
Yeah, I just wish they had. Approach this from a different angle, but the rest of the film I really enjoyed, because it does much more of what the first film did, in that it's meta and subverts expectations or cliches about things for the most part, that generates comedy in a way that just the written jokes by themselves inside the film that aren't meta and aren't commentary don't. So it's fun and novel in that way, since certainly not every movie is like this.
Yeah, if you liked the first one at all, you definitely have to watch this one. But like, you can't just. I wouldn't recommend that you jump straight to this movie, even though they have that short little on recap at the beginning there. Don't mm-hmm. jump in on this movie, because this movie is meta on like five different levels. Like, it's meta within the movie itself. It's meta to the first movie. It's meta to the TV show a little, mostly in the credits. It's meta to the real actors in their real lives making jokes about them actually, you know, the things that they have actually done in their careers. And it's just like all of that plays together in so many different ways. And somehow it's not like I don't find it annoying or distracting at all. I just find it thoroughly amusing.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you. I think it skirts the line a little with the Ron Swanson scene earlier on where he is doing the same thing he did in the previous movie, where he comments on the second time it's always worse and blah 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 blah, etc., etc., etc. But then they save it from just being that meta commentary by pulling it back into his divorce that's going on at the time, that sort of realigns it back with what's happening inside the film.
He lays it all out on the table. All of the things that you might expect are going to happen in this sequel, that it's going to be bad and it's going to be repetitive and it's going to be stupid. But also not. Once they get to college, they get to decide who they want to be. And
makes a crack about having twice the budget that they did the first time around. And they just want to see exactly the same thing. And indeed, part of the plot is about those expectations. So again, if you haven't seen the film, and you want to be surprised by some of these delightful subversions of your expectations, then I would recommend you stop listening to us talk about it right now, because there's going to be a plot twist that is part of the joke that is in here. And that joke is that they try to not do exactly the same thing, and then they find out they should have done exactly the same thing, and then they find out that no, they were right the first time and they shouldn't have done that, but they should have just done a better job at what they were doing. And then it goes to another level of the movie. So I enjoy that other level of commentary. And again, Rod Swanson is involved in that. Nick Offerman, he's always going to be Ron Swanson to me. But they managed to pull that off, and it has a bit of a Bad Boys 2 vibe inside of this film. As well, in some of the structural elements of it, where they do have a sort of mission that they kind of accomplish. And then after they kind of accomplish that thing, and also a botched little mission at the beginning of this. And then once they accomplish the thing at the end, they find out there's another thing they got to do at the end of that. And it involves, violating international sovereignty, in going to another country.
I guess I never really made that parallel, but yeah, it is pretty similar, except they're not driving a Humvee down a hill or
onto a Lambo
covered in landmines.
Yeah, but so I think there are some parallels. It's not literally riffing or paying homage to that, but it certainly seems to have inspired, I think, part of their thinking on the sequel.
Yeah, it's not Hot Fuzz where they hang a lantern on the fact that Bad Boys 2 is a great action movie, and then they do a bunch of the things from Bad Boys 2.
Yeah,
it's very just structurally like,
well,
it.
And you also have really Peter Stormare, so there you go.
Oh yeah, jeez.
Peter.
Huh. Although he wasn't the head bad, he was the wild card in Bad Boys 2.
He got
2.
A promotion, sort of. So Peter.
Although he spends the entire movie talking about why they don't sell cocaine and heroin anymore, and all these weird drugs.
I enjoy him. And he was good at this. He doesn't do anything really remarkable. It's just fun to see him. Of course, he played Alexei in Bad Boys 2. I think he had a more dynamic and interesting role there, of course. But in this...
I mean, he always plays like disheveled Russian mob
or the
guy,
devil,
basically.
But
right, Constantine. He was a pretty good devil in Constantine. Spoiler for Constantine, I think. Maybe
no,
not really.
I don't think that he's even spoiling anything plot related. But I like seeing him show up, and of course we see him at the beginning of the film. They've got the octopus heist that goes on. They don't. For some reason, they're working a case where they think something's being smuggled via coded messages that are inside of an online college course class thing. Because that is the reveal that you are going to college. Turns out to be an online internet college thing. I guess to give them this first mission and not just to initially propel them into an actual college situation like they do later in the film. The thing is, they don't know what's actually being smuggled till they open the case, and there's a very fake octopus that is there, and it is there in all its practical rubbery glory.
It's inking in his mouth,
which is a line, and it scampers away. by scampers, I mean seems to be dragged along the floor. That's all in there, and there's a big tractor trailer truck thing fight. And stuff. It's something where they definitely spent money and put a lot of effort into accomplishing that. And it all is.
It's a sizable set piece, although it always makes me cringe when Channing Tatum smashes the hole in the windshield and shoves his arm through there and grabs Ghost, because I'm just like, oh, you are going to cut your arm off on that sharp glass.
He really should have just busted out the whole windshield instead of just that little hole, because it looks like it's like 2 inches from his forearm when he's sticking it in there, and nothing happens. Fortunately, I guess. I mean, nothing would have happened. It's not really like real glass.
Although his arm was in there when he got yanked off the top of the truck. So,
and I do like when Peter Stormare keeps calling him the fucking Terminator.
Terminator, yeah,
it's nice. They're this close to apprehending them, and unfortunately, Jonah Hill had tangled himself inside of some netting thing that was on the side of the truck, and that then causes a problem because he gets knocked off by an I-beam, and then gets slung around that, and then that yanks Channing Tatum out of the thing, and then they're both just hanging there in the docks. Yeah, and they get summoned to Principal Chief Deputy Ron Swanson's office, and he's none too pleased. And this is where you get the big meta, you know, sequel commentary, and then the revelation that they're going to put them back into what they do best by sending them back to the Jump Street program, only with a bigger budget, and make sure they do exactly the same thing they did the first time. They show up at 21 Jump Street, and unfortunately, Korean Jesus, who was inside of the Korean church from the first movie, they have acquired that. That has been acquired back, so it is no longer for use by the 21 Jump Street program. So they're across the street at 22 Jump Street, which is a Vietnamese church, and behind them is a 23 Jump Street condominiums construction thing. So obviously they're going to build something else there. Is a bit of an in joke.
He says, "Let's not get ahead of ourselves." So we'll probably be back across the street next year. I said, "Yeah, no, let's not get ahead."
And so they go inside, and it's a much more substantial space. And in the middle of it, there's the office that they're going to go to, and it is like a cube of ice. Channing Tatum says,
"It's an elevated glass."
Yeah,
because
it's Ice Cube's office. Ice Cube is back. And at first, I thought he was going to have as much screen time as he did the first time around, but no.
No, he has so much
more.
It's
so good.
It's
great. I really genuinely love Ice Cube in this movie. He is so good at simmering, boiling rage that he's just trying to suppress.
Even his text messages, you can hear the anger. What up, Doug? I'm gonna kill you, Doug.
Oh, he's so good. And the buffet later. Anyway, so we're getting ahead of ourselves. But yeah, he's there inside the cube of ice, and he's giving them the download like he did in the first movie. Only this time, the drug is Wi-Fi, and they have the similar sort of situation where it's like it's Adderall combined with ecstasy something, so it lets students study really hard and give them a lot of focus, and then it causes them to trip, and that this one girl, Cynthia, was tripping and locked herself out of her room and freaked out and jumped off of the dorm room and died. And you know, it's very similar to the kid who died in the first one from the drugs.
With one notable exception, this girl is black instead of
and
white.
Unfortunately, this leads to Jonah Hill talking about how much he cares about the situation because of that. It's awkward and painful and just awkward. So they leave and they go to college and they have a room that they're getting together. They have a montage of setting up their room with beanbags and the Lambo poster and shower poofs
and bath caddies,
all the requisite stuff.
Hot plate, the bacon thing that you can buy at Walgreens,
the bacon wave
in the microwave.
Channing Tatum jumps on his mattress. He's really excited about it. However, there is a substance on the mattress. He should not have done that.
And then, of course, Jonah pops his head out of the room to brag about how it's already on the mattress.
That's a thing. So they get themselves out of that scenario by going to their classes, and like in the first film, they immediately try to hit up the other students during the lectures for access to the drug. And this does not go as smoothly as the first time, where there was a convenience sticker. This time, the guy immediately clocks him as a narc, and Jonah Hill, in the middle of his psychology class, with the guy who is on The Good Place that I've got the name of. So the student's like, "Oh yeah, I can see your badge." And Jonah Hill looks down, and then he tries to play it off like he didn't look down. So of course he's a narc, and he's not gonna get any Wi-Fi. And this is Channing Tatum. He's in a class, and there's two football bros. He's talking about the football, and he said, "No, this is my laptop." And it's a funny joke. And Patton Oswalt is teaching class. Patton Oswalt does a good job. He has tenure, and he might be sleeping with some of the students, and they should return this text. Mm-hmm. But he is a nice little moment there. They keep trying to snoop around and look for things, and there is nothing coming. So they go to check in with Rob Riggle and Dave Franco to try to get an idea, because drug dealers will know drug dealer things, apparently.
Well, hang on. Didn't they first go to the slam poetry, or is that after that?
Oh, you're right. First, it was the slam poetry.
The
slam poem was painfully awkward, and I didn't laugh nearly as much as you did, because this is apparently, according to you, according to what you told me, your favorite line and your favorite scene in the entire film.
No, I don't think that is the case, because after watching it again, there are a lot of other things, but... Jesus died for our sin, Theas, is a great line, and whoever wrote that should get an Oscar or something, or at least, like, you know, a box of cookies
painful.
Or something. But it's an incredible line. Julia Robb hurts. It's so good. Just to jump around a minute, my favorite line in the entire movie that I say all the time, because it is so innocuous. That nobody would really know that it is from this movie, is that in the end there, where, you know, they're having their fake argument about the tracker, and then all of the cops and his buddies pop up, and then the nerds from 21 Jump Street pop mm-hmm. up with the machine guns.
Mm-hmm.
You know that part? The nerd kid says, "We're here as well," in a very sort of bland way, and points his laser sighted machine gun at them. And I say,
"We're
that
here as
all
well.
The time. We're here as well," in a very awkward, mundane way.
Does that happen a lot? You like go to the Safeway and you're like, "We're here as well."
I adore that delivery from that kid and that line, because he's just like, "Yes, yes, we're still here." Remember from earlier? Because mm-hmm. call back to the movie. It's one of my favorites.
It's pretty good. They have the really just painful. So painful slam poetry, and then they're gonna get out of the situation that they find themselves in, and go talk to Rob Riggle and Dave Franco to try to deal with this. Oh, I'm sorry. This is also where Jonah Hill establishes that he has a crush on Maya, a girl who is there at the thing. So I appreciate that she's there.
Not coincidentally, she is black, which may come into effect a little later in the movie.
Then they have a thing where they go to talk to Rob Riggle and Dave Franco. Previous objections still stand. However, Rob Riggle is trying to give them a clue out of the kindness of his heart, I guess, because he's feeling very great about the situation he finds himself in. He looks at the photo that they have, the one photo they have of Cynthia buying drugs, or at least they think Cynthia buying drugs, and they see that there's a tattoo on some guy, and they don't know who it is. They go talk to the tattoo parlor people to find out who he's been giving the tattoos to and whether or not it was this tattoo, and they did a Blade Runner zoom in and enhance thing on that tattoo, so they have a very clear photo of it. The guy goes, I guess it was, you know, like a big guy, football guy with a red mohawk. And then this tips him off, because that was the guy that was inside of Channing Tatum's class. And so they try to, suavely, ingratiate themselves, to him, to get close to him, to get the view of the tattoo, to confirm that he's it.
Yeah, dog. They bro down at, walk-on day on the football tryouts. Which, you know, goes pretty well for Channing Tatum, because he's like 30 and very athletic, and not so well
but,
for
I love Channing Tatum, for whatever reason, is doing some ear maintenance with a Q-tip in this scene, and he drops his Q-tip. He drops his Q-tip into the sandwich that what's his name? Wyatt Russell, Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn's son, has. And then they have a talk. I got my Q-tip in your meat. I got my meat in your Q-tip. It's like a whole new kind of sandwich, like a meat Q-tip sandwich. It's like a meat cute. You guys want some of this? It's a meat cute sandwich. This guy and I are having meat cute. Meat cute, of course, is when two people meet and establish a romantic relationship. And it's, of course, one of the many, many, many homoerotic moments in this film where they're just bro-ing down with their appreciation for one another.
I'm pretty sure the first one or two times I saw this movie, I was not actually familiar with the term meet cute, but I have since.
Well, you should watch The Holiday with Kate Blanchett. Kate Winslet.
I don't want to watch that movie.
There's an old man who describes specifically what a meet cute is because he was in Hollywood and he explains it because it's part of the film. So they have a meta commentary in The Holiday if you really want to go for that.
I will watch that entire movie just to get that.
It's not good.
Can you give me a timestamped URL link to that?
I will do no such thing. But they also reveal that the coach is Archer. It's H. John Benjamin who is there. It always throws me off whenever I see him in person because I think he's going to look more archery.
You forget what he looks like. Yeah. No. He is a weird little homunculus man.
He's just
No, I adore him. He's the best, but he's a very strange looking fella.
He kind of looks like Tom Colicchio. He should play Tom Colicchio in the Tom Colicchio biopic that they should do someday. But
hang on, Tom.
Oh, I can't believe you're googling Tom Colicchio.
I don't even know how to spell Tom Colicchio.
Chef, judge, this person.
He's a chef. Okay, chef.
Never mind. Don't worry about it, Dan.
Oh, yeah, he does kind of have John Benjamin eyes.
John Benjamin eyes? All right, so...
No, I mean, the eyes are very distinctive. Yeah. John Benjamin.
So they have a thing where Wyatt is awkwardly... what's his name in the movie? Zook? Zook...
You would have thought that they would have put it together sooner that the tattoo is a bazooka, because that's his nickname, because he's Zook. His arm is a bazooka.
But no one puts this together. So anyway, Zook, with his bad nickname, he invites Channing Tatum, this is when there's some awkwardness again, because Jonah Hill is inviting himself to come along, Zook is ignoring him completely and kind of pretending like he's not there or talking. And then they maneuver their way into the thing. And so they go to the frat rush week event thing, party.
Yeah. So surprise, surprise. In college, somehow Channing Tatum is the one fitting in, not Jonah Hill, which you would have thought was reversed because... college is for smart people or something, which is where Jonah theoretically excels in this world.
Movie, and so they have to reverse these roles.
Although he does get in pretty well with the kids that hang out in the art building and drink boxed wine and talk about Picasso.
Yeah, I mean, much in the same way that Channing Tatum got along with all the nerds.
In the chemistry lab, yeah.
They go to the thing, but when they're getting ready, Channing Tatum puts on his puka shell choker, Jonah Hill's like, nobody wears that. But they go to the thing, and who is wearing exactly the same puka shell choker? But Zook.
It's the two strap versus one strap of this movie.
And they have an exchange, and they are hanging out and doing stuff. And Jonah Hill tries to. Very awkwardly look at the forearm of the jock guy.
Of Rooster. Yeah, he just says, hey, how's it going? He's like, hi, nice to meet you. He's like, oh, yeah, we've already met. So you got any tattoos or body art that I can see? It's a really weird question.
He shouldn't have been so forward. But so anyway, they establish the same sort of tension where Jonah Hill was fitting in and Channing Tatum wasn't, and this time it's the reverse. Channing Tatum is fitting in and he's not, and they gotta go go their separate ways on this investigation. They got to sow their cop oats. They have to have an open investigation. And this is more of the relationship talk between these two men. So that's nice. And it goes on for most of the film. And then
they're less of brothers in this movie than they are partners.
And Jonah Hill is, of course, he's had a very good time with Maya. And he's enjoying that immensely. It's great for him.
I don't want to do the lines, but it always makes me laugh. We're talking missionary. We're talking where I'm on top and she's on her back. Oh, God. And then, of course, like, as he's leaving the room, okay, I'll talk to you later. You're very good at the sex. Thank you. I'll text you in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And he does his walk of shame through the campus.
And
he's not a hit it and quit it kind of guy. He's a hit it and continue to hit it both emotionally and physically.
And Ice Cube is very upset with them for not making more progress on this. Jonah Hill talks about how he's got some sex and he wants some recognition of having sexual relations. This is where Ice Cube says, okay, well, good job, etc. And stuff. And he's going to regret that in like a minute because sure enough, they have a parent day. And the parents, Jonah Hill's parents from the first film, make a return, Stranger Things dad and the other lady, and they are going to a breakfast of some sort that they're hosting on the campus, and Ice Cube is there, which is weird, right? Because why would he be there? Mm-hmm. And sure enough, he is the father of Maya, and the look on Ice Cube's face is fantastic. The shock and rage and I'm going to murder you but I can't expose this investigation right now kind of a thing that happens that flicks across his face, that is just so good. And they're sitting there at the table and they're trying to talk and he's
just glaring at him with that eyebrow.
So mad. And Queen Latifah is the mother, and she's, you know, just trying to make talk. She's trying to talk about, you know, stuff, and she's like making, you know, excuses like, oh, he works hard, and it's difficult for him at his job. Then Ice Cube just gets up and ransacks the buffet.
Well, as if his day wasn't already hard enough, he asks for, what, some asparagus or something? Or no, some green beans, and the guy gives him, like, three green beans, and he flips out and starts grabbing them by hand and flipping things over.
Yeah, and then he starts
stuff.
Beating the, was it a chicken or a turkey on the carving board thing, and, like, he's working through some issues.
Doesn't he, like, throw a plant or something at the end?
Yeah, he's throwing everything. That's not good. And after this, he's blowing up Jonah's phone, and Maya's like, "Why does my dad have your phone number?" And he's like, "Oh, I don't know. That's weird. Maybe a student directory or something." Trying to make an excuse, and then he's like, "You know, we should just like take it really slow and not do things and stuff and just talk, etc." Which is, you know, a thing that he probably would not have said had Ice Cube not been there destroying a buffet, but
yeah, but he actually likes Maya, so they spend all night talking till 8 o'clock in the morning, where she has to go to class, and they had a very lovely night getting to know each other. And this is somehow the second time that they've hung out all night talking, or you know, being intimate or whatever in her dorm room without noticing that Jillian is, or who plays a character named Mercedes, is sitting on her bed across the 8-foot dorm room from
I
them the whole time.
I love her so much because she is so cutting and cold and mean about this whole situation, and calling him on looking on calling Jonah on looking old. And she keeps talking about how it's good that he can move at his age, and just like she's really on the ball with this stuff. I enjoy her immensely. Yeah.
She's great. I don't know if you watch Workaholics, but she's great in that as well. Different character, but also great.
But I go on to appreciate her character more towards the end of the film. But it's good to have her with these moments in here.
She's also wearing a pink footy pajama onesie to sleep in.
Yeah,
apparently.
And Maya apparently is only rooming with her because she felt bad because Cynthia had killed herself, and so she was trying to be helpful, but she obviously has some regrets about that because she doesn't like or get along with Mercedes.
Yeah, Mercedes was Cynthia's roommate prior.
And meanwhile, while this is going on, Channing Tatum is working out and stuff with Zook, and they're talking about how, you know, there's just a ceiling, they want to break through the ceiling, they want to bust through the ceiling.
Your ceiling is like so high.
What I particularly love about that is the hand gestures, the arm gestures, really.
Yeah, this is a sight gag and also a callback to something that Channing said he wanted to do when he was talking to Ron Swanson. He said he doesn't want to do the same thing as before. He wants to break through the ceiling and keep going. And he's doing a thing with his fist where he's moving it up through his hand, which is playing the role of the floor. And if you can't imagine that, good for you, I guess,
the
probably.
Best. Then there's another line in here, you know, that they want to tear those anals up. So that's a good play on words. The anals
of football history. Yeah. I mean, it's not surprising that they don't know how to pronounce that word, but it's okay.
But it's good, because they got that joke out of it.
I love how... The writing in this movie, similar to the first movie, it's so utterly childish, but at the same time, every line, it's relevant to the characters and the plot, and it actually moves things forward. But at the same time, it's basically just like sex and poop and fart jokes. Like there's nothing particularly sophisticated about most of these jokes.
No, there isn't.
But it's all funny, and it all serves an incredibly useful purpose. Like, the more you, like, watch this or think about it, like, all of these lines are references to things that will happen or did happen, and it just makes a big cohesive story, in spite of being completely idiotic.
And they, of course, had the same scene as they did in the previous film where they're on drugs, where they have accidentally taken the drugs from the twins that live across the hall in the form of an edible, and
Jonah Hill, being the nervous snacker that he is, has eaten six of the Rice Krispie treats already that are packed
with the
Wi-Fi.
Gives Jonah Hill the idea that while they have the focus, they should go ahead and accomplish the camera tapping, wire tapping of the fraternity house. So they do that. Channy.
It's another very Animal House like montage of like when they're sneaking in to go pretend to kill the horse, but they're like running around campus and doing rolls and hiding and then shooting the grappling hook and pulling himself up while Channing does his parkour to climb up the side of the building because he's Spider-Man or whatever.
They do a good job with the editing there, where you get the very intense action music and dynamism of the parkour intercut with Jonah Hill just very slowly going up on a whining electric motor with no music behind it. It's nice. They get up to the attic. They start drilling holes basically all in the same spot to put the camera stuff in. They get some of the cameras in, and meanwhile downstairs, Zook is going through the stuff about the people applying, and everybody wants Channing Tatum in, raucous applause. Nobody wants his brother in, and Zook is like, you know, it's a package deal. I'm not sure if he's going to come if we don't let his brother in, and the brother's harmless. Let's just go ahead and let him in. And so they agree to that. But of course, it hurts Jonah's feelings. and they make a little noise, which means that people are going to go look upstairs. So they skedaddle by covering everything with junk and then running out back across the quad. And Channing Tatum throws his backpack into a bush, presumably to go get that later. And they make it back to the dorm. But before they get back inside of their dorm, their sacks are put over their heads and they're hauled off. Now, I did not actually think they would be in any trouble, of course, because I just thought this would be the fraternity hazing, and indeed it was.
Yeah, they tried to hint at it with the frat boys saying, like, he could be our dude, man. He could be in this thing with us, but his loudmouth brother could totally blow our cover or whatever the hell he says. It's basically trying to insinuate that maybe they are the covert drug dealers, and they're going to try and pull Channing in on their side, but Jonah's going to mess it up. So, I mean, they, you know, they try to hint at the fact that when they throw the bags over their heads and put zip tie handcuffs on them, which is a little extreme, and then point guns at them and say, you know, you already know, don't you? And threaten them and then start shooting the guns at them and their water gun spraying vodka at them.
But before that, they have hallucinations. This is an expanded version of the hallucinations that they had in the prior film where Rob Riggle has his head turned into various things. In this one, they are transported to a set of very different lands. Channing Tatum is in a land with rainbows and clouds and...
He's on an island dancing to like techno music. He's got a little tiny Power Wheels Lambo.
I would say it's more rap because the lyrics are
oh yes.
But then on Jonah Hill's side, he has his own music and it is Creed.
Can you take me higher? And he's like slowly just moving from left to right, kind of like staring at the ground, drooping. He's very, his world looks like a lava planet or something.
The best use of Creed in a movie. Sorry, Titan AE. But they have his lava planet thing. And then meanwhile, back on Channing Tatum's side, he's having such a blast that there's multiples of him. And then there is also Vietnamese Jesus dancing. Which is an interesting appearance to have in his hallucination, but he's there. And then Channing Tatum starts to drift off of the ground, and he's going to fly and reach into the sky and stuff, and Jonah Hill freaks out about being left, and so he literally drags Channing Tatum down inside of the hallucination, and Channing Tatum freaks out, and they're then woken up, and then the vodka is sprayed in their faces. And they are sworn into the thing. Yeah, good for them, I guess. And then it
turns into College Beer Fest, the movie, where, you know, drinking games to see if they are worthy to be in a fraternity. I don't know if this is how it actually goes in fraternities. I never rushed or pledged a fraternity.
No, screw that. We had two at my school, which is surprising because it was an art college, a private art college. So that means, like, almost nobody. And they had started the second one the year that I got there. And for some reason, I don't know how to describe this, but somehow when you go to a private art school, you think you're going to be surrounded with people who are like almost exactly like you. However, the spectrum is actually wider than you think. There are people who are super nerdy. There are people who are still like kind of the cool kids. They just happen to do art. And then there's also like these jock bros who happen to do art. And it's like, how did you get here? Like what compelled you to pursue this?
If you're talking about art school stereotypes, not to spoil the credits at all, but I love Channing's character from the art school one where he's got the long hair and the goatee and no shirt and just tattoos everywhere, and he's clearly like mid-90s art guy.
That was good, but so there was a variety, but for some reason all of the sportier people in the art school decided they wanted to be in these fraternities, and so they would rush and do stuff, and apparently something involved like running around like in the rain or with sprinklers or something. And so then they all like ran back into the dorm room and they were just all very excited about that. And I was just like, this is incredibly strange, guys. I don't know what your deal is, but that was part of their rush thing. They were happy, whatever. So I believe this thing, I guess, as much as I can, because I have no evidence to dispute it. And they do the stuff, and Jonah Hill is not very good at drinking vast amounts of liquor and booze and stuff. But they've also been on drugs a lot, so I'd forgive him. They decide to part and do the separate things and stuff. This is where they get a debriefing that they've used all the expensive stuff that they have, and they no longer have carte blanche with a budget, Cate Blanchett with a budget. And they have to try to figure this all out for themselves. And
this is also an amazing scene, because this is the first time they're back in the office since Parents Day. And Channing Tatum being a little slow, he notices that there's some tension in the room, because Jonah Hill is strapping on a very loud Velcro bulletproof vest while Ice Cube glares at him and sets a pistol down on the table. And then he says, like, what's going on? And Ice Cube turns around one of the picture frames on his desk, and it has a picture of Maya on it. And it takes him a minute or two to get it. And then he flips out and starts running around the office shouting how Jonah Hill had sex with Ice Cube's daughter. He keeps repeatedly yelling it over and over and over again while Ice Cube continues to glare at him. And then Channing Tatum points out that Ice Cube actually, in fact, high-fived Jonah Hill for having sex with his daughter. And how funny is that? Look at this. You bragged to his face. Look at this face here. You bragged to him. Captain, you high-fived him for having sex with your daughter. And then at some point, Ice Cube gets fed up and points the pistol at Channing to make him shut up.
But then they shoot Jonah Hill in the nuts with the taser.
Yeah, he's trying to make some sort of a concession to sort of equal things out. So Channing suggests that Ice Cube punch him in the face real hard, and Ice Cube has his own idea. So yeah, he tases him in the nuts.
And this is also, like I said, the budget is reduced, so they got to solve this case on their own. They go back at the case again, and they try to piece it all together. And you know, they have confrontation about whether or not Zook is actually behind anything, and he's not. Channing Tatum doesn't think he is, and they're trying to piece together who else could it be, who else was she talking to, and stuff. And then they find out from the roommate that the roommate Mercedes that apparently she had been talking to the psychologist, and so they go to the psychologist guy's office and he's not there. They break in, look at all the stuff. And then, they get caught by the psychologist guy coming in, and he just assumes they're part of their appointment. And they're there for couples therapy. And then they proceed to have couples therapy, for their partner issues, in their work relationship. But just dressed in the guise of a same sex relationship. And then,
You think it's possible that we embedded? What, like when we were drunk? Channing is so dumb, but just great.
I have to admit, I laugh at all the dumb stuff. So they decide that it could be something else. And Channing's got to go to his football thingy. And, Jonah Hill figures out the book thing, and he's like, oh, you know, nobody checks out books anymore, so it's got to be the library. I'm going to go to the library. And much like the first film where they did the pinata chase, this is the library scene, sort of.
But they split up because Jonah Hill is going to go do the investigation, but Channing has to go play the football game so as not to blow his cover, but also he wants to play the football
game. He doesn't want to disappoint Zook. Jonah Hill unwisely enters the library, which has some sort of motion sensor light system, which seems ill-advised for sneaking up on anyone. And he gets into a situation where you can see it as Ghost from the first part of the film, Stormare, who is casually hanging out, waiting for the person to show up, who they're there to meet. And he starts frantically texting Channing Tatum, who is playing the game and then goes and reads some of the text when he sits down. And then he's like, oh, no, my brother needs help. And Zook's like, forget him, man. He's pulling you down. And this is when Channing Tatum's like, I gotta go to the bathroom, and he leaves.
And which is not something anybody does in the middle of a football game.
But whatever, it doesn't matter. And then he confiscates apparently a cart and drives over to the library, goes up in his football outfit, costume, whatever, and he's uniform and with his ridiculous football helmet on, and sneaks into the library as well, right behind Jonah Hill, in the same exact spot. And then they start talking very loudly, and Stormare's dudes are going to come over and see what's up. And this is when Jonah Hill has to pretend like he's getting a blowjob from somebody in a football uniform.
You know, this is the second movie in a row where to avoid being discovered by the bad guys, they pretend to be engaging in oral sex on each other. Because in the first movie, he's dressed like Peter Pan. So Channing says, just if they come over here, pretend like you give me a blowjob. It's like, why? I was like, well, you're dressed as Peter Pan. That's why. And in this one, he's in a football uniform, which I guess doesn't really mean anything, but... anyway, it's a bit peculiar to come around the corner and see Jonah Hill there with his ridiculous scarf on and Channing Tatum in his football uniform.
And unfortunately, the bad guy says a bad word, and Channing Tatum freaks out because he has been taking his gender studies class. And
takes one gender studies class.
And this is so...
my God, can you please just back me up for once?
He blows their cover. He blows the situation wide open. And they confront the bad guys, and they're like, you're under arrest. And they're like, well, we have...
don't forget this, another good trailer line. It was probably used so many times in the trailer that I usually forget it. Is, what's up, fellas? Remember me? I'm your best I'm your worst nightmare. Oh, God.
He's so dumb.
Just,
I love it.
He delivers it so genuinely, too.
And... Stormare's like, yeah, well, we've got guns and you guys don't have guns. And Channing Tatum says, well, why don't you guys just fight me like a man? And like, well, because we have guns. So why would we do that? And he makes a good point. So they frantically try to escape, they do. And this is when Channing Tatum Spider-Mans himself down the stairwell, and Jonah Hill very slowly... goes down all the stairs, and then they get inside of the golf cart thing that has the helmet on it, and they make it go faster by Jonah Hill pulling out a wire, which seems illogical. And then they have a Benny Hill moment, which has slightly different music for licensing reasons, I guess, where they go back and forth in front of another building while being chased by the bad guys in their car.
It's a good chase. And again, this is where it gets meta again, where they're driving around saying, you know, where should we go? It's like, well, whichever direction is cheaper. And then there's a fork in the road, and he takes the one through the sculpture garden instead of the parking lot. And he starts yelling at him, you know how expensive that's going to be? And of course, the bad guys in their Hummer chasing them through are smashing into all of the art, including the giant egg/ball art where Jonah was hanging out talking to Maya earlier.
And they bust that. They bust the balls, and they chase them back to the stadium where the brakes stopped working, apparently, I guess, as a side effect of that wire pulling maneuver. Before they do that, the most important thing I wanted to say about this entire film, there's a serious retime artifact that occurs in a shot in this chase where there is a enormous lens flare and a bunch of trees. And before you even see the lens flare, the trees are like morphing and sliding to the side because of the retime artifacts from the optical flow blending of whatever they were using, Chronos or whatever other optical flow solution they decided to go with. And it is a big, tearing, awful mess. So disgusting. And they peel off out of there back to the stadium, can't break, and then they hit the goalpost, which is apparently something everybody tries to take down. It explodes spectacularly and takes down the goalpost, which seems like something it wouldn't necessarily do because it's a golf cart thing. That's electric. And H. John Benjamin is very sad and upset about this because he doesn't want his thing knocked over. But for some reason, everybody's okay with it. And the police show up, and they're going to bust the people who did the...
And don't forget, earlier, there was, you know, when they were arguing, this was the same moment from the first movie where Channing was like, dude, I found a college application in your locker. What the hell's going on? He's like, well, who knows how long we're going to be undercover. And this is what he's saying, you know, I got a scholarship to play football, and Zeke says I get a room with him, and I'm thinking about doing that because we could, you know, we could go pro or something. And Jonah's, of course, saying, like, that's kind of insane because, again, you're 30, and at some point that's going to come out. But, yeah, once he crashes and the cops all rush in to arrest him, he goes, hey, I'm a police officer. Just take me in and I'll explain what's going on. And he says, no, don't screw with Channing because he's just a student. He had nothing to do with it. And he said, I'm making a decision for you. Just I can't make you happy like these football guys can. So, and then there is a montage of sadness with Jonah where he's... having dinner by himself.
So, and, someone may be by later, though.
Lobster for one. Enough lobster for one person only.
Channing Tatum is working out with Zook. And then he decides that he's going to try to do the same fun things with Zook that he did with Jonah Hill. That being chasing lobsters in the kitchen. And Zook just doesn't get it. He doesn't see why that's fun. He doesn't understand why chasing lobsters in the kitchen isn't entertaining.
After their meet cute scene, apparently there is no more romantic comedy relationship between them. They just work out all day long and drink at night.
And I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, because of the way they were playing things about them having a secret and how it's not actually drugs and part of their thing and stuff, I thought at some point surely they're going to proposition him for a threesome with Zook and Rooster, but it didn't actually happen. So it's just like, well, that was kind of a waste. What was their secret thing that they had?
I think it was probably just the team or something.
Well,
I don't know.
It was a secret. It was a football team. So anyway, they don't have the stuff working out, and Jonah Hill is insistent that there's more to this, that it can't be the psychology guy that was busted.
You know, now that you say that, I'm thinking, I need to go back, and I don't know if you looked at the special features on this. Mm-hmm. Did you look at it at all? There are so many special features. There are 41 minutes of deleted scenes.
Oh, God.
And there are also, you know, there's just like a 6 minute, like just alternate takes of just random jokes that they thought were funny that didn't make it. And there's also a featurette, which I think is quite hilarious, called the alternate version or something. And it says, like, for foreign audiences, they thought it, who might not get the comedy of it, they decided to recut the movie as a serious cop drama, removing all of the humor. And all that's left was this 9.5 minute long clip. So it's the whole movie in 9.5 minutes without any of the comedy. And it's actually kind of amazing. But now I want to go back in and rewatch with that whole the propositioning thing in mind, because you know, when he says when he asks Channing to make a tape with him, there's a potential for some misdirection and some humor there.
And of course, it turns out it's their like pitch for whatever football thing they were trying to go to, because they were trying to go to a better football school or whatever, or pro or whatever, I forget. Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill realize separately that the case isn't really closed and that they've got more work to do and that they need to do it together. So while Jonah Hill is riding around on his bike in basically the same park as the first film, Channing Tatum comes and confronts him.
Right. They're also demoralized too, because the department has closed the case because there's a TV report where Ron Swanson is saying the psychiatrist was found with Wi-Fi residue in his office, just like a case from last year. And then he looks right into the camera and says, exactly like a case exactly like the previous case where he was saying, you know, just do the same thing or whatever. But I love that when Jonah's like looking through the folder, he goes into Ron Swanson's office and goes like, I think we missed something on this case. Just get the fuck out of my office. Just immediately like, no, we're done. It's over.
And when Jonah Hill's standing there in the park and Channing Tatum comes up, they have an awkward conversation about how maybe they could go do a thing. It doesn't have to be like a thing and, you know, stuff. And that they heard that somebody's moving some stuff in Puerto, Mexico.
Spring break. He's got some time off. It's okay, you know. Be willing to go down there with you and, you know, see if we can figure this out.
They do. They decide to suit up and illegally go to another country to... I don't know why. And of course, this is filmed in Puerto Rico, in San Juan. So they could have just made it Puerto Rico, at least.
I feel like it's almost funnier that they keep going with the stupid fake names.
I guess Metro City. So they they fly in and there's all the spring break stuff happening. It's very spring breaky. And they are suiting up and applying lotion very gingerly to the back of Channing Tatum's neck. But
it's exactly like the getting dressed for prom montage where they're trying to rekindle their friendship, but still awkward. Yeah. I'm trying to walk out of the bathroom at the same time and running into the door jam. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. You see I was going first? Oh, God, it's so good. And then, of course, you got, you know, the colorful, stupid Wayfarer sunglasses, the Sun's Out, Guns Out t-shirt, which just, you know, screams spring break.
And, of course, another, you can see the bruise from Channing Tatum being shot from the first, scar from being shot from the first film. And it's just important that you be able to see it, so that's why he has a sleeveless shirt, for a later scene where he gets shot again. in the other arm. But so anyway, they do some good old police work and follow where the drugs are being distributed from, and then they figure out that it's Mercedes, who was Cynthia's roommate, who was a dealer, and they go after her and chase her into a disgusting restaurant where Jonah Hill comments, people are actually eating in here, which is also something that I'm frequently surprised by whenever you see like the, remember when MTV would have MTV Spring Break and then like there would be all those disgusting people like crammed into a beach somewhere and they'd all be drunk and gyrating around. It's just like, ugh.
it's just a recipe for like heat stroke and vomit and
hepatitis,
flop sweat. Hepatitis, sure. Probably.
So anyway, they go through some very noisy beads see Mercedes giving her business plan on Wi-Fi distribution to all of the dealers that have gathered from various colleges that are meeting there at spring break. The twins are back again, They are being called out on being on high on their own supply, Mercedes is none too pleased. She threatens them with the gun, and then the father, Peter Stormare, points out that that's why they pay all these other people to do it, because she's got to have a clean record, and those other people come out with their guns, and this is when Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill bust in with their guns, and they're gonna stop the bad guys, and then there's more bad guys who came in from the other room, and they got more guns.
You put your guns down. We have like way more guns than you.
And they get into an argument, which is the kind of argument you'd use to distract somebody, and it is. And they do actually have a tracking device for more police to come in, and this is when you get one of the lady cops who didn't like them very much from the first film shows up, as well as the nerds from the first film. They all have guns with laser scopes and Kevlar vests, and Ice Cube comes in through the door, and he said, spring break yourself, which is a thing. It's not my favorite Ice Cube moment in the film, but it's kind of comical that it occurs.
Oh yeah, the girl in that pops up, that's Rai, right?
Maybe. Was she actually an actress, or that she was just singing the end thing?
No, she was the actress in the first movie. She was 50 Shades of Grey Lady's partner.
Okay, yes. All right, so that must have been her. So they do the thing. They have the...
Oh, I just liked it. You remember the line that she says when she pops up with her gun?
We shoot your dicks off.
We shoot dicks off here at Jump Street. Just, you know, to let you know what you're looking at potentially, and then you know, we about to jump right up your ass, or whatever he says, right in the crack. Yeah,
and then they have a moment of tension before everybody starts shooting each other, and they all duck and cover and shoot. And Mercedes is unhappy that no one's actually getting shot until the guy next to her gets shot. And she's like, oh my God, you actually got shot right after I said that? Oh. And she finds it very entertaining. I like her. I like her a lot. She's just an awful person. And it shows. And they keep exchanging gunfire. Peter Stormare makes off with the droogs. And they go chasing downstairs. And... Ice Cube sees his daughter and says, no, you can't be here. Like, don't you know what happens in a shootout? They always take a hostage, and, you know, they always take the girl hostage. And sure enough, Mercedes is right there, but she takes Ice Cube hostage, and
shoots him in the foot in an incredibly unrealistic CG blood splatter.
Yeah. Well, it's also unrealistic that Ice Cube basically moves around for the rest of this movie like he had not been shot in the foot. There are so many bones in your foot that it is painful. So they go over to a car and get out of there, and Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill go out there, and they see a car that they can commandeer, which is a Lamborghini, which is Channing Tatum's dream car, and he's always wanted to drive it, but he knows that he can run faster on foot, and Jonah needs the car, and they need to split up.
Not actually the same Lamborghini from his poster.
It is a Lamborghini, Dan.
It is a Lamborghini. It's a Lamborghini Murcielago, to be more specific. It's orange. It's
very and
nice.
So Jonah Hill.
It's actually the Lambo that was on Zook's poster when they discovered that they were Lambros.
I'm sorry, Dan, that I'm not being specific enough for you about these Lamborghinis.
I'm just saying that it's I am apparently also a Lambro because I had a Lamborghini poster on my wall when I was a kid. In addition to the little metal die-cast cars that I have on my desk over here still.
Still?
Yeah, I mean, like, from when I was, like, 10, like, I still have them.
Well, I have a tiny bird of prey. It was one of those micro machine sets that they had. it doesn't do anything. It's just a little plastic bird of prey. Klingon bird of prey.
Is it like, tiny like a micro machine?
Like, yeah, it's like an inch.
Oh, mine are like, I don't know, like 8-10 inches or something. Didn't you see the photo I posted the other day of that?
I just didn't realize it was actively on your desk. I thought it was like an archive thing.
No, they were up on top of a bookshelf, and I dusted them off, and now they're over here at the desk.
I also have a sizable box full of other various models and toys. Enterprise and another Enterprise and a shuttle and a runabout and Romulan Warbird. And some other things. So anyway,
you know, just maybe some things.
Yeah,
from
maybe
Star Trek
like
in
if
there.
Jonah Hill had commandeered a Klingon bird of prey, that would have been really cool.
And then for some reason, Channing needed to take it instead of him, and he had to run while Channing enjoyed the bird of prey.
Perhaps today is a good day to die. But they pursue one another. This is targets on foot and car respectively, and they. Have Channing Tatum catch up with Peter Stormare to the building that he's going to because there's a helicopter that's going to pick them up from a rooftop. Of course there is.
There's also some parkour fighting on the beach, which is
hilarious. I almost neglected the moment where they come across more of his henchmen, and he's like, you want to fight like a man? Well, you better fight like two men because he's got so many guys and there's more twins, which is a comment from Channing Tatum, and Channing Tatum has to beat them all up, and he grabs one of the spring breakers, he jumps on top of his shoulders, and uses her as a bludgeon to beat the other assailants with, and then he pursues Peter Stormare up the building, and meanwhile, Jonah Hill finally gets control of the Lamborghini to chase down Mercedes in her Jeep. He unfortunately drives to the lobby and gets out of there just in time to see Ice Cube left inside of the Jeep, handcuffed, and shouting for him to be released right now, or you know he's going to kill him, etc. You're fired stuff. But then Mercedes is up on the thing, so he goes chasing after Mercedes. And when he's up there, he is going down a hallway very carefully, looking for her. And she grabs him from the side and pulls him into a room and beats the crap out of him. And he's very reluctant to hit her back because she's a girl, and he doesn't want to hit a woman. And then they start fighting, and you know, grab me with your liver spotted hands, and get up, old man River. And
it's a very good fight, even before the Mr. and Mrs. Smith thing.
And then the Mr. and Mrs. Smith thing is probably my favorite part. There is a moment of tension where Mercedes seems to be implying that Jonah Hill was going in for a kiss, so she was going in for a kiss, but it does seem like she was going in for a kiss, whereas Jonah Hill was not. And they have to like mutually deny that anyone was going to kiss anybody. How disgusting that would have been. And she accuses him of Mr. and Mrs. Smithing him.
Okay, I'm going to punch you in the face again so we can go back to fighting because you're making me so uncomfortable right now. And she's hitting him in the head with beer bottles, and he hits her with a plastic vodka bottle because, of course, only the best vodka that comes in plastic bottles.
Yeah, it's very accurate. Or at least I believe so. So they have the fight spill over out of there, and she manages to get out of there and get the gun, and she holds it up to Jonah Hill's head, and then Ice Cube's free, and he has a gun, and he's got a shot. He doesn't have a clean shot, but he's gonna take the shot. Sometimes you want to take a dirty shot. Jonah Hill's trying to discourage him from doing so, because that would kill him. Meanwhile, you see a person run behind Mercedes and Jonah Hill. It is, of course, Ice Cube's daughter, who beats Mercedes over the head with some sort of rubber fish. She falls over to the side, they capture her, and that's it. No more jokes about the playing stickball behind the old sweet shop.
old Pop Whistlebee's sweet shop or something. I can't even remember what she said.
I mean, her ability to deliver these ridiculous lines with complete deadpan, it deserves applause in and of itself because she has some ridiculous things to say. But Jonah Hill goes running up the stairs after what he assumes to be Peter Stormare going to the helicopter at the top. Channing Tatum is also running upstairs, but he's doing it faster on another set of stairs. They have a split screen, which they've done several times in the film when they're showing the two of them doing their things at the same time. They finally get up to the top, go in the doors, and then the split screen joins together and reveals that they're in the same shot in the same space, that they ran up different stairwells and they're facing one another. And then they decide they got to work together and go out on the roof and take care of this. And Jonah Hill has no more ammunition left, only Channing Tatum does. So he's got to pretend like he does. And they get out on the roof, and Peter Stormare does not want to take off yet because his daughter isn't up there.
I have to wait for pudding.
Yeah,
is what he says.
And
I love that this like hardened drug dealer with his psychotic daughter. He calls her pudding.
Psychotic drug dealers are people too, Dan. And they,
I'm not sure.
Have Channing Tatum shooting up some of the henchmen, and Jonah Hill sees one of the henchmen come out from under behind the thing, and he's going to shoot Channing Tatum. So Jonah Hill moves to do the same thing that Channing Tatum did for him and jump in front of the bullet as it's being fired. However,
he jumped way too early.
And so Channing Tatum turns just in time to get shot in the other arm, basically in exactly the same spot on that opposite arm. Jonah Hill's like, it's the thought that counts. And he's like,
it's taking the bullet.
And they skid out along up to the helicopter. Channing Tatum jumps for the helicopter because, of course, it's taken off and you have to jump for it, which is kind of par for the course with these sorts of films. And Channing Tatum is holding on. Jonah Hill has just enough time to get up there and decide what he's going to do, and he's going to jump too. And there's a montage of him remembering all of his failings, and then he's like, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to hold you down. I'm going to lift you up, etc. Whatever. And so he jumps on the thing.
It's pretty great because you know you're thinking that he's just going to totally whiff because he's been whiffing this whole time, even though he's going to like the movie subverts the subversion that you think it's going to do. So it's like, you think he's going to have these flashbacks of all these failures, and he's like, yeah, I'm totally going to do it this time. But then it's a 21 Jump Street movie, so you're like, no, he's totally going to fall on his face. Like, he's going to die. But then he goes flying off the roof and catches the side of the helicopter effectively, and it's very impressive.
It is a situation where you definitely were expecting them to subvert the cliche of him being able to catch it. However, like you said, they're subverting your subversion. It's a double subversion. They have they've dominated that subversion, so it's a complete dom sub situation where he is actually holding on to the helicopter, and you did not expect that to happen.
No.
Did you expect that situation to happen, Dan?
Probably not the first time I saw it. No.
So he's holding on.
And then Channing Tatum is so like impressed / shocked that like he slips basically and you know loses grip and Jonah catches him and holds him up in the air as the helicopter is flying away and they're flying over downtown Puerto Mexico.
They're flying over a green screen. They have awful edge wrap and they're.
Well, there's some practical stunt person flew at a distance over some city.
Yeah, but not them. they are very firmly on a soundstage, with some sort of protective mat underneath them. They look gross. The edges are bad. The edges are real bad. And this is of course when Channing Tatum when he slips and Jonah Hill grabs him, then he's like literally lifting him up. He's gonna have to reach for the grenade that he's got stuffed down his pants, because of course Channing Tatum only has talcum powder stuffed in his pants, and Channing Tatum has to reach up inside of the shorts of Jonah Hill, and he grabs his penis, and of course it is stiff from all of the adrenaline, so he grabs it again, and then he finally grabs the grenade. Pulls the grenade out and throws it up. He bites the pin off while saying it's not hygienic, which is a good bit of ADR looping because he didn't. There's no way those lips were saying that thing.
I thought he said like, "Oh God, it's in my mouth."
He
or
says
something
about hygiene, and then he throws the thing up into the thing, and he's supposed to say something cool, so he says something cool, literally. It explodes the helicopter, and they drop into the water. And the helicopter goes down.
Cheering from the shore. Speaking of bad ADR, before I forget, while Ice Cube's glass office was a great set piece for this movie, I hate that it's so echoey that, like, no matter what they did for cleaning up the dialogue in that scene, you can tell they're using the on-set dialogue because it is just echoey and bad sounding.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if you noticed that, like when they get to the close up, it sounds better because surprise, surprise, the boom mic is closer to them, or, you know, maybe they just managed to like block off more of the glass. But like, I guess they couldn't spend the time to put up the sound deadening the moving pads or whatever. So
yeah
it
well,
sounds really bad.
You know, they like to take their time when they're making things.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. I mean,
it's
pretty difficult to get a whole like three setups.
Why there's
a day.
So many extra scenes that have been cut from the film.
I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna watch the 41 minutes of deleted scenes. I watched the featurettes already, and they're pretty good. Like all of Channing and Zook's audition tape is in there.
Oh, that's good.
It's pretty good. Yeah, there's some other really stupid viral videos that are like memes from the time that the movie came out. It's not interesting anymore.
I'm really looking forward to the deleted scenes for the Han Solo film. I think that's...
I'm sure those will get released.
That's probably going to be at least 41 minutes of that. They've conquered the day. They get out of the water.
It's going to be, you got Donald Glover there saying, you know, they're going to sneak in to some place, and he's going to put on a fake identity with some sunglasses and a hat, and he says, absolute silence to fall into character.
And he's going to say,
I need absolute silence to fall into character.
I bet you're expecting me to say I got a bad feeling about this, but I'm not going to say I have a bad feeling about this, because that's the kind of thing you would expect. So I'm going to do something different. And then I'm going to say, I've got a bad feeling about this later in a different scene. And then you're going to be like, oh, that's so clever, because you didn't say it the first time when we thought you would.
Because after I say it for real the second time, I'm going to like give you a knowing look and then like raise an eyebrow or something. And we're going to be like, oh, we're all in on this joke.
I really do wonder how the filming went, but we'll never find out. So anyway, they
Disney, hire us. We can do this too.
Well, I think that's why they didn't stay hired. So they
plus like we've got a cool directing duo name, as cool as Lord and Miller. We can be Sturm and Steel. Or Steel and Sturm. Whatever direction, it still sounds ridiculous and fun.
Yes.
It sounds bankable. It's bankable. What it sounds.
It's ridiculously bankable fun. But they have it's fun you can take to the bank. But they have them get out of the water, and then they have their Abbott and Costello moment of, what'd you say? And he says, I said something cool. He said, cool, what'd you say? And he says, I said something cool. And then, you know, just who's on first moment, Jay. Appreciated for its stupidity, and they're partying, and all the spring breakers are so happy that they exploded a helicopter mere feet from them and killed two people, or did they?
They get bandaged up there, and they're talking about it again, too old for this crap or whatever. And then Channing has an idea to get him back about the the bullet in the shoulder, so he's gonna just, you know, just graze Jonah with a gun. He's going to shoot him in the shoulder. And at the last second, Jonah chickens out and dies out of the way, and the bullet ricochets off of a metal table and comes back and hits Channing again, grazing him in the original arm in the first movie. So he has now shot himself.
Yeah, and Ice Cube comes up and tells them they got to go work on their next case. And this is when we get credits that show several next cases for them.
Amazing. It's the best credit scene. Like, you talk about all these Marvel movies, like, oh, there's gonna be a mid-credit scene or a post-credit scene. Like, no, this is the best credit scene of any movie ever, because it's technically in the credits, and it's a montage of ridiculousness that they actually spent time and money on. But Ice Cube says medical school, so it shows 23 Jump Street medical school, and they're being chased around a hospital in a wheelchair with a briefcase, and they got some like Yakuza guys with machine guns behind him. And then there's 24 Jump Street and 25 Jump Street. Like, I can't even remember all of them. Like, imagine any word that has ever been placed in front of school, and they have one of those, and it's hilarious. Some of them are posters. Some of them are actual scenes. Like, I love the poster for Dance School, which is one of the later ones where Jonah's got his nice
leotard
spandex pose. Yeah, his leotard.
I like Semester at Sea.
Says, yes, finally something I'm good at. The Semester at Sea in is that the Russian one or no?
I forget which one that was. I just like the title Semester at Sea. That was, and I also like the one with Bill Hader when they're in culinary school.
School. There's a microchip in this empanada. Old family recipe, best to keep it a secret. And then there's that super fake throwing the cleaver into his chest.
It's a good use of Bill Hader. And then my favorite use of Seth Rogen in any film he's ever been in. Isn't this end credit scene?
So yeah, somewhere around what, like 32 Jump Street. They're in the captain's office, and it pans out a little, or zooms out a little bit, and you see in Jonah Hill's chair is Seth Rogen, and Channing Tatum says, "Does Schmidt look different to you?" And he makes a face and goes, "I got new glasses."
And then they go back to
Go
back to Jonah Hill. And he says his name wrong when they're getting out of the car to go work on the case.
Yeah, he calls him just like we always do, Jenkins, and he goes, "It's Jenko." It's like,
And then they go to the next film, and Jonah Hill's back because the contract dispute has been resolved.
That's great. Glad to have you back. What contract dispute? I don't know what you're talking about.
But then they keep going until like 37 or 43 or something. It's ridiculous.
I think they make it to 41 Jump Street, and then it becomes 2121 Jump Street when they're in space.
Oh, and then there was Generations, where they brought back another original cast member.
Right. You got Richard Grieco making a cameo as Booker.
Yeah. So
Which I feel like that was actually a deleted scene from the movie because it looked like he was still in his wardrobe from another scene or something. I don't know.
I have no idea. But Richard Grieco, not recognizable as Richard Grieco these days. Yeah.
Well,
who is?
He was very famous in the 80s. Like, it's kind of what happens.
Sorry, Richard. But so they get out of the situation with the film being over with all of these extra films. And I have a point of contention in that you said it was a franchise. However, they didn't have any spinoffs. They strictly had sequels.
Oh, wait. Before we get out of the credit scene, we forgot that not only are all these sequels, there is a video game. There is a thermos and a lunchbox. There's an at-home game where you basically shoot like little Nerf darts at plastic penises. And there's a picture of Rob Riggle saying, "Oh no, don't shoot my penises." Yeah. And you set them up on top of like a table or something and they fall into like three different pieces.
It's all relatively offensive stuff for children to be doing.
It's just like if you take this property and turn it into, in your imagination, like 2 decades worth of franchise, like all of the appropriate merch spinoff nonsense.
Yep. And that concludes the film. Right. So I'm glad I saw it. I regret not seeing it sooner.
That's good.
My skepticism about it had kept me away, but it should not have. I should have believed in you, Dan. I should have.
It is one of the best sequels in terms of ramping things up and increasing expectations and not letting you down.
I agree. And there was even the little Easter egg that you pointed out earlier of a Statesman football team.
I
did not notice it until you told me. So obviously it's commentary on Channing Tatum's other film from around the time that he would be going on to do later. I mean,
I gotta believe it's coincidental because there's no way in 2014 or whenever they shot this 2013 that 2016-17 Kingsman movie would be able to,
unless he had like already signed his contract or something. It's very strange, but so anyway,
and the script already existed saying that the Americans were statesmen.
He was a statesman twice.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they felt like they had to put him in Kingsman 2 because he had already played this character in Statesman.
You see,
football.
It's illegal to be registered in 2 Statesmen.
Maybe he joined Statesman after getting out of Jump Street, and it's just sort of a continuation of the exact same character. Maybe his character, Tequila, is basically Jenko.
Except he has a horrible accent.
Yeah, well, I mean, is it any worse than my name, Jeff?
Yeah, well, those accents at the beginning of the film are rather embarrassing, especially for Jonah Hill attempting to portray what he feels is appropriate dialogue for his character in his improv bit, which is incorrect. But his name's Jeff. But it's a good film. And with that, I think we are done.
We're way over time on our quota, but this movie is just it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so just like disturbing to me on so many levels that these two movies kind of like nothing about these movies should have spelled success anyone. Like there was no reason either of these movies should have worked, and there's no reason that the second one should have been so good, especially building on top of the first movie, which was still very good.
Yeah, I agree. They, by all rights, the creative team, as I imagined it to be, did not really have the capability to pull this off. And I was wrong because they pulled it off. They really did. Genuinely, there's stuff in here where I did not see the things coming that they were trying to put down, because that frequently happens even in, you know, a silly fun movie where you're just like, oh, I know where they're going with this, and then it's just, you know, you're along on the journey anyways because the point is the jokes, not the complicated plot stuff. But with this one, I genuinely did not see where they were going with many of these moments in the film, because they kept subverting things and switching things around in such a way that you didn't actually build up those sort of logical cliche things. Like if you're watching like a Law and Order SVU episode, you're like, I know who the killer is in the first 10 minutes. Like this one, you have no idea who the drug dealer is at first, which I really thought was quite a feat, because...
Especially because it literally doesn't even matter for most of the time.
No, it doesn't matter, but it's part of the tension, and then you have to have a drug dealer come in at the end, and it has to make sense. And they pulled it off in several ways because they had the psychology teacher there, and it makes sense for the psychology teacher to have been involved with that. They established that precedent, and they also make it make sense that it wasn't actually him, that it was Mercedes, and that she was there through enough of the film that it makes sense that she would be a part of this. You know, so it's not, none of these are also like Deus Ex Machina, like all of a sudden there's a thing there. So I appreciate that part of the construction of this plot. Like they aren't just suddenly like, and then there was a drug dealer who we'd never seen through the entire film. No, it's all linked together, but it's just done so in such a way where you weren't expecting those links to occur when you're initially watching the film. And you just, you get like an aha moment when it's finally revealed who is actually linking up these things. And so I appreciate that in the construction of the film, and it's something I honestly did not think they were capable of pulling off, and they totally did. So kudos to them.
Yeah, and also props to the editorial folks or whoever made the call. One of the featurettes is it's called Prologue, and it is an original beginning to the movie that they cut off of the beginning, which was a very smart decision. It basically shows them like right after the original. High school incident where Channing made fun of him and they went their separate ways, and like how they both like how their lives diverged and how they ended up becoming cops or whatever. So like Channing was going to go get a football scholarship, but he was, you know, really sad that he couldn't go to college because he didn't graduate high school. There's got this dramatic scene where he calls the football coach and gets all mad. And then Jonah Hill's got this thing where he actually does go to college, but he has changed his Slim Shady persona to that ridiculous art school goth character that you see in the credits. And that's like his look. And then he just gets laughed at in college. And then he does the real genius thing of calling his mom and saying, if you loved me, you would come pick me up and take me home because college sucks. So he basically like, you know, dropped out of college the first time. And it was just like way too much like weird character development and emotion for the beginning of this movie. And then to completely take it in the opposite direction with like, just like picking up with their dumb characters where they left off at the end of the first movie. So it's good that they cut that off, but it's also interesting to see how they start, how we're originally going to start the movie.
Yeah. I'm glad they cut that because it doesn't sound interesting.
It's fully finished too. Like it's got credits in it too. It's color corrected. It's got sound mix. It's like they did it. And then at the end there, they're like, nope.
Wise decision to remove that, I guess. I mean, because I didn't need that. I just wanted to go into what the story of this film was. I knew they had a rocky relationship that's been established. We need to rehash that.
Turn down for what, man? As they're dancing alongside their car, driving by itself.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
This was fun.
Yes.
I want to watch the movie again right now.
Get up, old man, River.